In this part of Focus, we will be talking about women in science, and particularly we'll be talking about what might be done to encourage girls and young women to study for careers in science and study things like math and engineering and technology, computer science. Our guest for the program is Lisa Klein. She is a professor of materials science and engineering at Rutgers University and is visiting here the campus. She came here to give a talk about organizing faculty. That was yesterday. But when we saw that she also was an authority on the subject of women in science, we thought that would be a good thing for us to talk about here on this program. And she said yes, she would be happy to do that. Questions are certainly welcome as we move through the hour. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. We have email as well, so if you'd like to send along your question that way, it's will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, thank you very much for being here.
Sure.
I guess the place to start out with is acknowledging the fact that we have now come to a point here in higher education where more than half of the college degrees, and I do believe it's true of bachelor, master's, PhDs, more than half of the degrees awarded go to women. Mm-hmm. But if you look at what it is that women are studying, where they're getting their degrees, it is not like that. Particularly in these fields that are known as the by the acronym STEM, so it stands for science, technology, engineering, mathematics, where it seems that give or take a few percentage points, we're talking about roughly a quarter of the degrees are being earned by women. And if you go out and you look at women who are working as engineers, it seems that it's also about that same level. So it's about a quarter of the engineers out there in the world are women. And this is in spite of the fact that now, at least for a couple decades, we have been talking about encouraging girls to study math and science and prepare for those kind of careers. So that's the question. Why is it that given that we've made this a priority, that it seems that the numbers for women going into scientific careers hasn't changed very much?
Well, these, of course, are my own observations on this, and I do occasionally pick up a study that's come out from National Science Foundation or American Association of University Women that addresses this. And I think that it is still perceptions of what the science and engineering fields are like, that they're somewhat nerdy and Dilbert-ish, and that because of that, it's not a very welcoming environment to women. So there has been this continuous encouragement of women to go into these fields, but even when small gains are made and then people kind of say, ah, yes, we have reached that threshold, and then they pull back a bit. There isn't as much focus and encouragement. Then there is some retreat from those positions. So it is a matter of a continuous encouragement. And while the women, I think, have gone into these fields and they're increasing numbers, for that to show up in women faculty at engineering schools, women employees in engineering-intensive companies and science companies, it's going to take a little more changing of the environment, not just changing the women, but changing the environment that they move into.
Mm-hmm. Well, how what do you think is the relative importance of, on the one hand, the perception that math and science is just not something girls do. It's not feminine. It's not attractive. All of that sort of baggage. So that it has something to do with that, or that there is some real sense that either those departments or then companies that would employ those women are not welcoming to women. And that partly is sort of a social perception thing, but partly it's a real life thing about what life for a woman would be like in an engineering school or working as an engineer.
Right. There's I think that there's an issue for all children in school that math and science are perceived as being hard. And those who are willing to work hard in elementary school and middle school and high school, somehow we have some cultural trends that are going in the opposite direction of working hard. In any case, if people are willing to work hard, because I will admit that some of that stuff isn't intuitive, it's not enjoyable, it does require some hard work. If they're willing to do that, I think the aptitude is there, no matter whether it's boys or girls. In college, again, I think there's still this perception of those are the hard subjects. Those are the departments that require more credits in order to graduate with that degree. And that is a deterrent to many, both men and women, the fact that the engineering curriculum has more credits than, say, the psychology degree has as credits. Then there are still the cultural perceptions, I think, that are going to permeate not in a necessarily a conscious way, but in an unconscious way, the perceptions are still there. The other thing, moving into companies, working in the corporate world, there's still, I think, some tracking of people into one area versus another. And if it's an engineering company, it is traditional. It is a, you know, 8-to-6 job, and there hasn't been much change in that pattern. Very little accommodation of anything beyond a very traditional pattern. Yeah.
So it sounds as if a part of the issue here may be for women who are thinking seriously about that as a career, may be that they're thinking about what, generally speaking, are policies about family.
Mm-hmm.
And are people expected to put their job first, or is there some allowance for the fact that, yeah, people do have families, they have family responsibilities, and that they will fall on both men and women, but I think we know who they fall on more.
I think that those patterns, the traditional patterns, are still around, and that that the perception is that, yes, the burden falls more on the woman.
Yeah.
And there isn't much flexibility. But the other way that I look at this is that these are good jobs, generally well-paying jobs, because these are highly trained professionals, and that it is not the sense that having a family and having additional family responsibilities is a lifetime career. The career is that you want to be in a profession where you have satisfaction from what you do in your job. And if it does mean taking off a year or two or working at less than full capacity for a year or two, there's still an incentive to keep going. I have always found engineering to be a very satisfying job.
Mm. Well, I'm curious to find out a little bit, or for you to tell a little bit of the story of your own experience. And it's my understanding that when you came to Rutgers in the mid-1970s to join the engineering faculty, there weren't any women.
Correct.
You were the very first one.
Yes. The faculty of engineering is about 120, and it's increased slightly since that time. So I was the first woman to join the material science department there, and there were no women in other engineering fields. As the years went by, every year and a half or so, there was another woman who joined the faculty, so we got to the point where each of the departments had one. And the long stretch was going from one per department to two. And I feel that was we checked the box, we hired a woman, we did what we were supposed to do, and, you know, hire another? Well, and it took a while. So now the faculty is about a a good reflection of the students, so it's about 20% women on the faculty.
Mm-hmm. Now, my understanding is that the story about you was that you started thinking about a science career when you were in grade school, and this
Correct.
Was at about the time of Sputnik. And
right.
somebody apparently came and talked to your class about the importance of people going into scientific fields, and you said, yes, mm-hmm. I'm going to be one of those people.
Yes, yes. So first grade, Sputnik was launched in October of first grade, and our science coordinator for the public school district came to visit each one of the first grade classes and told us that, you know, this was it. We were now in a space race with the Russians. We all took it very personally and very that, you know, it was us against them. And I guess I took it more personally than some of the others and decided that was what I had to do. I promised my first grade teacher that I would be a scientist and engineer.
And what did your first grade teacher say about this?
Well, apparently she remembered this. And when she ran into my mother many years later, she was checking up on me. I mean, and this was a good, I'd say 25 years later. And my mother was amazed, first of all, that she remembered that I had promised this in first grade. But she reassured her that, yes, in fact, I had done that.
Yeah. Well, it stood out in her mind because perhaps at that time there weren't very many little girls who were
right.
standing up and saying, darn it, I am going to be a scientist.
Yes.
What do you have some idea what if this would have been a time when other girls just wouldn't they would not have been thinking about being scientists? What was it for you that said to you, well, yeah, of course I can be a scientist. Well, why not?
There was certainly no discouragement of that. And I think that my parents did have the attitude that you can be whatever you want to be and that they would, you know, support me in that effort. I would bet that there were some other little girls at the time who said that, but maybe just didn't have the same encouragement.
Mm-hmm. So what was your experiences when you got to university and you went through graduate school?
Well, at the time, there weren't that many universities that admitted women directly into engineering programs. Mm-hmm. And I chose one. I did choose MIT. It was a fantastic place to be at the time. And there was a support network of other women students. We were a very small number. Often, I think we were somewhat invisible. But I think it was the other women students who were there that were the support network that I needed. Mm-hmm. So my experience was that it was a school that looks at things objectively, that is as best it can be a meritocracy and will reward those who put in the effort and do the hard work. And still, I feel it was the small group of women who supported each other.
Yeah. What were your experiences when you finished and you went out looking for work?
It was at a very transitional time. Mm-hmm. There had been, at the time I looked for jobs, was when we still had want ads in the newspaper listed under girls and boys, men and women. Mm-hmm. That has disappeared. We no longer have want ads that are listed in separate columns. And there, I think, were a number of people that I interviewed with that, you know, it was such a novelty that they hadn't really even formed an opinion. It was just kind of, wow, there's a woman here interviewing for this job, and we don't know that we should treat her any differently, so I guess we just interview and find out if she's qualified.
Hmm. Let me introduce again our guest for this hour. We're talking with Lisa Klein. She's a professor of materials science and engineering at Rutgers University. And we're talking about women in science and questions, comments, and maybe there are people who are listening who have experiences that they can share You can give us a call, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, the good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. Email will-talk at illinois.edu. So I've read a little bit about your work. I guess the one thing finally that I could grab onto that I'd said, oh, okay, I understand that, at least the implications for the work, is that one of the things that you have done is work on developing a kind of film, something that can be applied to windows so that they can be either lightened or darkened so that for the times you want the heat and the light to come in, you can do that. But at other times, you can dial them down so that they will reflect it back out.
Correct. The process is called sol-gel process, and it's sol as in solution and gel as in a jello mold. It's a process that goes through goes from a liquid to a more gel-like material. But this can be applied directly to a window pane. And the process all came about in working with a startup company and a major company through a program that was sort of seed funding came from the Department of Commerce. We worked on this program, Advanced Technology Partnerships. It was 20 years ago, and the company is now doing quite well. It's no longer a startup company. It is a publicly traded company in Minnesota. They produce these windows. So starting off with a solution that could be applied directly to a window, as simple as taking a architectural window and dipping it in a big tub of this stuff, it then attaches itself to the window. It is a series of layers, so three different layers. The chemistry allows one layer to turn a deep blue when it is energized with a battery. So there is a C-cell battery, 1 volt, that is applied, and when you charge it one direction, the window goes as deep blue. And then you take the battery out, switch it the other way, drive it back to the clear condition, and this can be done thousands of times.
Yeah, that's fascinating. All right. Let's talk with a caller here. We have somebody who's listening who wants to join the conversation. They're over in Indiana, so we'll go there on our toll-free line, line number 4. Hello.
Hello. All the times I've listened to this program, I never thought that I would go back to the time just before graduate school when my ex-wife asked for a fellowship in the sociology department at IU. And when she was brought in and sat down at the big table, the guys looked around, they looked at her and said, "We're sorry, you'll become pregnant and you'll drop out of the program, so we don't have any interest in helping you whatsoever." It was hell for me for a month, just being, you know, born a male. And I came up with intelligent women sitting on my left and sitting on my right in math classes, biology classes, and I always had a very difficult time emotionally to understand why social stigma and walls were always placed in front of these women who tried to go forward. It seemed very illogical to me, and I found out I could even talk to my buddies about it. It was something very, very strange in their psyche somewhat. That just at the, they didn't know it just couldn't happen, or they can't handle it. And I found out very early, which I'm very happy about, that that was a very silly position to take. And I just, oddly enough, finished a book by a woman physicist who teaches at Harvard. I think her name was Lisa Sanderman. And she's wrote a recent, she's written a number of books that sort of make physics more acceptable and to other people, called Knocking on Heaven's Door. And she's gone to CERN a few times, so things may be changing. Then yesterday I went to my favorite McDonald's, and there were three guys working. So I know something's going on, David. I don't know what it is, but there's something going on. And more power to you.
All right, thanks. Well, do how much of do you think in the past, if there was discrimination on women who were seeking academic careers, was it that there was this assumption by the men that the women wouldn't stick with it, that the time would come when family demands would come along, and they would abandon their academic career for that?
Well, I think what happens is that people in experiencing over a career they have that one bad example. This is true not just with the case of, I had this one bad experience with a woman coming to work here and she had a baby, so therefore I will never again hire a woman. There are so many cases where that one bad example is enough to outweigh the fact that some dozen women that they did hire were able to do their jobs well, contribute to the organization, take off some amount of time, but come back recharged and ready to go. I commend the caller for his awareness of the situation and open-mindedness.
Surely that does not happen now, does it?
I think that there are still people who have that, yes, I had this one bad example. I hired a woman and she had a baby and therefore I will never do it again. It's still out there.
All right. Let's talk with someone in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Yeah, hello. Good morning. I'm just very interested in your program, but I also want to make a little call attention to a summer camp from Campus Middle School for Girls. It's a middle school, and they're doing a summer camp, and the girls are exploring science and engineering. And the girls will be working with faculty people from the university. So all is not bad, you know. So things are going better. And the middle school is from end of the school is the summer camp is end of July to the beginning of August. So if somebody wants more information, they can get to their phone number, which is 344-8279, and it's a residential camp. Okay. Okay, so that was my bit. I was the director of Campus Middle School for a long time, and they are always working with the women at the university here. And so I think there's a lot of good things coming.
Well, great. Well, that's good to have that information.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I'm curious, Professor Klein, whether you think that if, you know, one talks about what you can do to get girls excited about studying math and science and doing that. I think some people have made the argument that it helps if it's an all-girl group. That is, the boys aren't there. They don't have to worry about what the boys think of them or of women in science, or they don't have to compete with them, or, you know, whatever. They can just relate to each other and to the subject matter. Do you think that that is helpful?
I think in some cases that is, as long as when they do enter the situation where they are in competition with all others, so they're in a situation where there are men in the class, if it doesn't come to them as a terrible shock and they can take the confidence that they built up in being in an all-women's program and transfer that into other situations, that's great. I have seen some cases where the transition is a little tricky.
Okay. Well, let's talk with someone else here. This is also someone in Urbana. This is line number two. Hello.
Yes. I have a daughter who graduated from the U of I in computer science and got a job with Hewlett-Packard and worked there for quite a number of years, during which time she had two children. At that time, Hewlett-Packard was a wonderful place for her to work. They had long maternity leaves, and actually when she went back to work, they allowed her to work from home often. Of course, a lot of places that's not possible, but with computers it certainly was. And rather interestingly, a few years after she actually retired to be a full-time mother, Carly came on the scene, a woman, and things got much worse than they had been before. I just wanted to lay that out there as a kind of a strange example.
Well, okay. I don't know. I see some nodding of the head here from my guest. I don't know if you want to comment on that.
I just think that corporate America has had some pretty tough times, and that the way that they have handled it is by just going back to a less than accommodating approach.
So you think it's pretty widespread?
I'm afraid so. But maybe things are getting better and we will recover from that.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for the story. So it sounds like what you're saying is that it's maybe not necessarily discriminating against women per se, but it's the idea that if we're going to survive,
yes,
everybody has to put the job first, and that's what we're going to expect you to do as an employee of whatever company this is.
I think that's sort of where we're hopefully coming out of that mentality.
Yeah. All right. Other questions, comments, stories are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, I think, you know, I can speak as a person of the male persuasion who had a difficult time with math and science. Maybe that's why I am a public radio talk show host and not a computer engineer. So I think that one could certainly ask the question, it could say, well, yeah, it would be good to encourage girls to be interested in studying math and science. But then one could say, well, it would be good to more broadly encourage boys and girls and boys, to study science. And that we ought to see if we can sort of get around this idea that it's so hard that only a few people can do it. And that there are people that are born to be scientists and there are people that are born not to be scientists. And, you know, either you're one or the other, that it's somehow something that just comes naturally to you. It seems to me that's something that we really have to get at.
Oh, I agree completely. And, you know, I hope you have some good ideas, too, on how to come to that, understanding that math and science is a skill that everyone can learn and that they shouldn't be avoided or presented in the ways that often they are. I think that there are some teachers who like to make it a scary field. And I agree, there should be more interest in these fields across the board.
Yeah, that's and I think it comes. It's no great insight on my part. I think it comes down to, I think that it applies to whatever it is that you're teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding
mm-hmm.
that individuals learn different ways,
mm-hmm.
and one particular kind of teaching, it will not be good for all students. And you just have to find, and that's why it's so challenging to be a teacher, because you have to figure out what is the right approach for each individual student to get them excited and for them to learn, because they're going to learn differently.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. We've implemented for our graduate students a seminar in learning styles, because, sometimes you can say that it is a result of the teacher only using their own style and assuming that that's the way everyone else is picking up information, and the awareness that there are many different ways for getting that information and many ways to present it. And it works well in one case, and for another person it has to be visual, another it has to be more theoretical. But, you know, give them all those strategies.
Yeah. We're talking this morning about women in science. Our guest is Lisa Klein from Rutgers University. She's professor of materials science and engineering. And we will talk some more after a very short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, why the flushing toilet took 2 centuries to catch on, why strangers used to share their beds, and why kitchens used to be cut off from the rest of the home. We talk with Lucy Worsley about her new book, If Walls Could Talk, An Intimate History of the Home. She hosted a BBC series on the same subject. She's chief curator of historic royal palaces in England. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Esquire Lounge, corner of Walnut and University in historic downtown Champaign. The Esquire Lounge provides an informal atmosphere for drinking and dining, serving fish on Fridays and sandwiches and pizza every day until 1 a.m.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon, and we have 10 different topics for you every week. Let me tell you that tomorrow morning on the show at 10 o'clock, we will talk about nutrition. This is something that is a regular feature of the show. It's always on the show once a month. It's all on a Wednesday, and the guest is Susan Kundrat. She's a registered dietitian, and Celeste Quinn will be the host for the show. So any questions you have about food and what that does when you eat it, that's tomorrow. We will have this week two more candidates, and then we'll finish up. This is a series of looking at some of the races, some of the candidates that will be competing in the primary here in the state of Illinois. It's now next week. Tomorrow, the guest will be Matt Getten. He is one of two Democrats that will be competing for their party spot in the 13th Congressional District. And also, we will be airing a live debate with the two, Matt Getten and David Gill, on our television station tomorrow night. This is Wednesday the 14th at 7 p.m., so you can see that live on WILL-TV. We'll also have it on WILL-AM and online. And then we'll talk with our very last candidate, and that's Chapin Rose. He is currently in the state legislature. He's a state representative, and he is running for his party spot in the Senate, in the state Senate, in the new 51st district. So we've had the candidates on the show, so we could ask them some basic questions, and listeners could too. So that's what we're doing over here the next couple of days. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics for you every week. You can check the schedule by going to our website, which is will.illinois.edu. You can also find us on Twitter at Will Public Media. Our guest in this hour of Focus is Lisa Klein. She is a professor at Rutgers University. She's a professor of materials science and engineering. We're talking a little bit here about women in science. She was the first woman to be a faculty member in engineering at Rutgers. This was in 1977 and was the first woman in the Department of Materials Science and Engineering. She's visiting the campus, was here to talk about faculty organizing. We're talking about something a little different here this morning, and questions, comments, certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We have some other callers, several, and we'll take them in the order they came in. So that means first is Urbana and line number one.
Hi, Professor
Hi.
Klein.
Yes.
I'm calling because, you know, I know that you're an excellent research scientist at a top research university, but it's also a unionized university, and you've been very active in the AAUP. I'm wondering if you could talk about what difference a unionized campus makes for women.
Yes, I think that the union at Rutgers, it's been there for 35 years, so it's been a fact of our very structure for a long time. The union has its negotiations with the administration. We have good terms with them, and I think we include important factors into our contracts, such as increasing the number of tenure-track positions at Rutgers. Because we were able to do that in the contract, we were able to hire young faculty, and the pool of young faculty tends to be more diverse than, say, the pool was 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So by having this as part of our contract, we were able to do hiring from this more diverse pool, which in turn made our faculty more diverse. It helped in increasing the number of women in the sciences and engineering and other underrepresented groups as well.
What about, I mean, does this help in terms of maternity leave or kinds of parental benefits that women and increasingly men need to use?
In our last contract, we did have a new provision for an extended leave. It meant that faculty and our unit includes graduate students. If there were women or fathers, new fathers, who wanted to request this, there was a mechanism for doing so. Not a huge number of people took advantage of it, but at least we had a regular process in order to do it.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. What about, I'm just now curious about salaries. I don't see how you possibly could get away these days with having people who had equivalent talent, training, background, were being hired for the same thing and not paying them the same amount of money. How do women fare in terms of their salaries?
The opening salaries for women faculty are public information because it's a public university, and I don't think that you can play the games that maybe you could have years ago. So I think in terms of starting salaries and even in the raises and promotions, there's transparency. And when you can see things and you can't hide things, I think that's always a better situation.
All right. To another caller, and this is, I think, also someone in Urbana. It's line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Just a comment on Carly. She didn't last long at Hewlett-Packard. And then when she tried to run for the Senate in California, she was rather soundly defeated, as I recall. But apart from that, it seems to me that society has a vested interest in protecting the rights of women in employment. Penalizing women for having children is very detrimental to the society as a whole. The Europeans seem to have recognized this, and particularly the Northern Europeans have been very progressive. However, Italy is a case study, I think, in what happens when you're not considerate in regard to women's employment rights and other rights. Their birth rate is, I think, the lowest in Europe, and their economy is anything but sound. Would you care to comment on this?
Well, these are interesting facts that you've presented. I agree that there's nothing to be gained by treating women differently. I'm not fully aware of all those facts, though I had heard that the conditions in Europe, in Northern Europe, were conducive to having women stay in the workforce. I just want to make this general statement that I think we all are served well when there is a diversity of opinions. Especially in engineering and science, the problems these days are just way too big for any one person to address them. They're complex. They have many nuances. They have many aspects. And the team that has more ideas, more different approaches is generally going to be the team that solves the tough problems. So encouraging a diversity, encouraging women to stay in these fields is a general good for all.
Yeah. And I just I want to someone wrote in an email here, and I guess I want to acknowledge this, that just one line, maybe there should be more discussion about men being the homemakers and taking time for childcare, with three exclamation points. So I would certainly not disagree that there should be discussion of that and that men should be doing that. And I guess my perception is that more than when we were children, men are doing that. But, you know, when you take a look at who's spending the most time taking care of children and taking care of the household, it's still the women.
I think so. And yes,
I'm not saying that
the generations.
Right. It should be. I'm just saying that's it.
That's right. No, there certainly are changes, and my generation is different from the succeeding ones.
Yeah. Well, here now, I'm just asking about your own experience perception, but when you see younger people who are mm-hmm. just coming in, who are saying just starting their academic careers, do they think differently about balancing work and home life, and do they expect the institution to be more sensitive to helping them do that?
I think that is their expectation, and in many cases, their expectation is met, and unfortunately, in some cases, their expectation exceeds what the institution's willing to offer.
Another caller here. This is Champagne in line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, hello. Hello, Professor Klein. I'm a faculty member here at the U of I in the Department of Mathematics, and actually I was a postdoc at Rutgers, so I have fond memories of it. So I'd like to make a couple of comments about I guess still, you know, fairly small percentage of women in engineering and math, particularly at the PhD level. I think it is a difficult and sort of important problem. And I'm a foreigner, an immigrant, and my feeling is that one of the huge reasons for this is the kind of an overall anti-intellectual attitude in America towards any kind of intellectual labor. So my impression is that compared to Europe, you know, here intellectual work is much less prestigious, much less sort of valued by the society, and this is one of the big reasons why minorities and women, you know, don't go into you know, sciences and engineering in significant numbers, because I think, you know, they see that what the society does value are occupations like, you know, law and medicine, and I mean, that's where bright women and minorities tend to go over, you know, academia. While, you know, in academia, in sciences, engineering, you know, sort of careers are actually very difficult. It's a pretty cutthroat business. It's very difficult to make it, you know, whether you're a man or a woman. So I think that, you know, there are a lot of things that we can actually do in academia to encourage more women, you know, to go into these careers. But a very large part of the problem lies with the society, you know, in general, which is changing the cultural attitudes that we have in this country.
Well, now I'm just curious. I want to ask the caller, as far as you know, in Europe, are there more women mathematicians than there are women mathematicians in the United States?
I think it varies, you know, from country to country. So to be perfectly honest, I don't have the hard numbers, but what I do know is that while in many European countries and also in Asian countries, you know, as well as here, they did exist in the past and maybe still exist, you know, some kind of sort of societal barriers, you know, for women to go into these careers, because, you know, there are various prejudices and old stereotypes about what kind of, you know, jobs and careers women and men should pursue and should not pursue. So in the societies like, you know, European countries, you know, Germany, France, where intellectual labor, you know, is valued much higher, once those general gender-specific societal stereotypes, they come down, it is actually much easier for women to then, you know, go into these careers and make it there than it is in this country, where, I mean, the general attitude towards any sort of intellectual labor is pretty negative, you know. So I think that so we have somewhat different difficulties to deal with here.
All right. Well, I appreciate the comment. Thank you for calling in. We're coming down to the point where you have maybe about 5-6 minutes left in this hour. Lisa Klein is our guest. She is professor of materials science and engineering at Rutgers University, and we've been talking here about women in science. I want to ask you a question here that gets me into some dangerous territory, but I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway. Admitting that with any group of individuals, there are going to be important differences just from one person to the next, and no matter what it is you're looking at. Okay, having said that, do you think that women engineers, is there something about the way that they think, that they approach problem solving, they think about doing research and so forth, that is different in some important way from men?
Interesting question. I thought this was going to go in the direction of how is it that they, you know, persevere in it, and is that something different? I do think that often it is some one individual that encouraged them. I think in solving problems, there's going to be a variety of approaches. I don't think that there are any that are exclusively a woman's approach to engineering or a man's. There may be something that in solving the problem the woman sees as an approach from her own experience that maybe a man who hasn't had that experience is going to kind of overlook. But I don't think fundamentally there's a difference. My interest is in saying that these big problems need everybody looking at the problem so that you don't overlook that detail.
And and hopefully you get enough diverse group of people together. They're going to look at, you've got 10 people that you hope they're going to be looking at the problem 10 different ways, and maybe that increases the possibility that one of those ways is going to be the helpful, progressive, productive way of looking at the problem.
That's right.
Well, since you raise it, though, let me go back to the other point, and that is, I think it says something about for women who are interested in going into these fields, how important mentoring is. I expect it's probably important for everybody. Is it? Do you think it, though, is particularly important for women?
Many studies indicate that that is the case. And there, if there's that moment of hesitation and a mentor is there to say, listen, I know it sounds like it's a little hard to do it now, but you can do it. It may be that it gets you past that moment of hesitation. I think mentors are important in basically everything that we do.
And does it matter if that mentor happens to be another woman, or can that, in fact, can a man do that just as well?
I think men can do it, but I'm going to stick my neck out here, and I'm going to say that you need a woman mentor if you're a woman that's got to get past that point of hesitation.
Okay. Because of the quality of the advice, or does it also help for the person who is being mentored to have that person as the model and say, well, okay, if she did it, then I can probably do it too.
I think it's both. It's that there's a sensitivity to the issue, perhaps, because of having gotten past that point. The woman has gotten past that point herself, and also that, you know, she is there as a visual role model. Yes, you can do it.
Okay. Gibson City, another caller here. Let's talk with them. Line number one. Hello.
Yes. One thing I would like to point out about the educational system these days is that all these kids are pressured by state rules. They are under constant testing, and it just pressures them too much. And I think that's one of the problems with the educational system these days. And it, my kids have gone to, doing really well, and, you've got all this pressure on them, and I think that's really a big problem in the educational system. So,
and do you think that particularly has some impact on how they do with science and math, or whether they even want to study science and math? I'm just wondering if it applies specifically to.
I do. They just. And you see this with all kinds of kids. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay.
I don't know. I'll just listen to your comments.
All right. Well, thank you. I don't know. Do you have any comments about that?
I think that testing is here to stay, and that we have to accept that fact, but we're going to need to make some adjustments. And yes, there is pressure. I would agree with that assessment. But I think that, we need to accept that we're going to have the testing and the pressure and just figure out better ways of handling it.
So a different question occurs to me. I think maybe when people think about science and what you do in science, that they think that that's about problems, about formulas, I'm guessing they underrate the role that creativity plays in science, particularly when you're trying to think of something or approach a problem in a way that nobody has done before. And I wonder whether, in fact, we don't somehow that aspect is doesn't get into the curriculum to the extent that it should.
Well, I've heard that, this emphasis on testing means that teachers are reluctant to stop, do a team project, allow people to try things out, and by the, empirical methods, try things out and see what works. So, yes, I think that's an important skill. But, they're going to have to figure out a balance and provide the time for that kind of creativity.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that we'll continue to creep forward? I mean, if our goal really is, say, let's look at engineering PhDs, if our goal is for them to be 50-50, mm-hmm. Do you think that we'll continue to creep very slowly to that point?
I think we're going to continue to see an increase in women in the sciences and engineering. I don't know that we'll hit 50-50. That would take a very long time and some other adjustments in our view of what engineering work, what constitutes engineering work and what the employment opportunities are. But I'm always optimistic that things will – there will be a few more women colleagues around, you know, as my career progresses.
Yeah. Well, over the time, but when – so how many – you started there in 1977 when you were the only woman in the department, and there are how many now?
We now have three. And I have to say, you know, as I mentioned – once all of the departments got one, it was tough
to
get to two.
We've got our one woman now.
So it did take 30 years, but now we have three.
Yeah, all right. Well, we can only hope that that it doesn't take another 30 years for a doubling or a tripling or a quadrupling of the faculties.
That's right.
Well, thanks very much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our guest is Lisa Klein. She's professor of material science and engineering at Rutgers University.